I don't know if I read the story and shared it with you or just read the story. And I saved it to share with you on a future date. But in Qatar. In the capital of Qatar is where Hamas has its headquarters. The head of Hamas actually lives and is a guest of the royal family in Qatar. Tells you how neutral Qatar is as it relates to being a negotiator in this process. And he was being interviewed over the weekend by some Western media outlet. And he says, you know, it's an absolute lie that we use women and children and civilians to shield our weapons. This is an egregious lie that is being promoted by the Zionists. Well, I'm going to reread what I shared with you. But before I do, I'd like you to know where it was broadcast, by whom it was broadcast. By Alaska TV, which is owned and controlled by Hamas. I'd also like to share with you the date, August 1st, 2014. This was broadcast not just in Kuwait, but in Gaza, by Alaska Hamas TV, August 1st, just a few days ago. And keep in mind that the Kuwaiti Muslim Brotherhood leader is a member of Hamas. Hamas and the Muslim Brotherhood are synonymous. There is no distinction between them. As a matter of fact, just as Hezbollah is the Mujahideen arm of the Iranian government, Hamas is the militant or the Mujahideen arm of the Muslim Brotherhood. Hamas is the specific Islamic terrorist organization of the Muslim Brotherhood. And while they have been the wellspring for many, the one that they have absolute affinity for, total control over, the one that is still part of and inseparable from the Muslim Brotherhood, is Hamas. It is the Islamic Resistance organization. So the Kuwaiti Hamas leader said, and Kuwait's very, very close, by the way, to Qatar, where the Hamas headquarters is. Every Muslim mother must nurse her children on hatred of the sons of Zion, so a new generation will erase them from the face of the earth. So every Muslim mother must nurse her young children to hate Jews, so that Israel will be erased from the face of the earth. And to the Gazans, you received the death you wanted. We Muslims are not like the children of Israel, who strive to stay alive. We yearn for death and for martyrdom. Now, Islam is not the only religion that has been this despicable. No, you can look in the annals of Christianity. There was a period in the first 3 to 4 centuries of the Christian religion where Christians sought martyrdom. They wanted so much to die to prove the validity of their faith that the Romans, who were accused of persecuting them, but actually didn't, would just laugh at them in disgust and say, all right, you want to go kill yourselves? Here's some rope. There's a cliff. Go jump off. See if we care. But never in the history of the human experience has a death cult ever endured this long and become this popular. Scott, in the break, you mentioned a quote from Golda Meir. What did she say?
Hold on, let me find it here. It was the one where as soon as they love their children as soon as they love their children more than they hate us, we'll have peace.
Correct. As soon as Muslims love their own children more than they hate us, we will have peace. And yet, what is every Muslim mother being told to do now?
Feed their kids.
To nurse their children on hatred of Jews. So I ask you this question, Scott. Based on this, when will there be peace?
Never. Can't happen.
Never. So when, if, based upon this, August 1st, Hamas TV, broadcast by the Muslim Brotherhood in Kuwait and in Gaza. Based on this, if the Israelis were to allow Muslims in Gaza to infiltrate Israel and kidnap and kill Israelis to their heart's desire through the tunnels, if they were allowed to allow the Muslims in Gaza to fire as many rockets into Israeli cities as they wanted, if they were to allow the Muslims in Gaza and in Judea and Samaria, what's called the West Bank, to attack and kill, kidnap Israelis all day long, would there be peace?
No.
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 Is there anything that Israel can do? Any capitulation, any appeasement, anything at all that Israel can do that will yield peace with these Muslims?
Other than ceasing to exist? No. No.
I would take the caveat away. Let's just say that Israel decided that, you know, for the betterment of the world, what we're going to do is what the whore in Great Britain that resigned from the cabinet is in favor of. We're all going to have a Jim Jones moment. We're going to brew up some special Kool-Aid, and every Jew in Israel is going to drink it down, the poison. We're all going to die. And while we're dying, we're going to take all of our military equipment and all of our flags and everything that that we have built here, and we're going to destroy it. We're going to, before we take our own lives, we're going to torch everything that has any semblance with Judaism and Jews and Israel, and we're going to obliterate it from the face of the earth. Would there be peace?
Probably not, no.
Why would you say probably? Are you you're obviously aware of what's happening in the Islamic State in Syria and Iraq, where they're essentially nothing but Muslims? Is there peace there?
I would say no. No, there's not.
No.
So
no.
So even if that happens, there wouldn't be peace. They'd start fighting each other.
If that's correct. If every Jew on the planet were to die tomorrow and Israel would be obliterated, there would still be no peace. You can never have peace when you have a religion where the mothers nurse their children on hatred. There will never be peace while there is a religion that tries to raise a new generation to erase people from the face of the earth. There will never be peace so long as there is a religion that says you wanted to die. And that unlike our foes who strive to stay alive, you yearn for death. So long as there is a religion that is followed by billions of people, like this one, there will never be peace. This is the true nature of Islam. It is what Muslims tell fellow Muslims. A Muslim Brotherhood leader in Kuwait, his name is Tariq al-Suwaidan, said that Muslims hate the sons of Zion. He called for Muslim mothers to nurse their infants on hatred and to plant it in their children's souls, so that a new generation will erase the sons of Zion from the face of the earth. Last week, Media Watch documented a similar Hamas sermon calling for total extermination of Jews. Total extermination of Jews. And yet most politicians are calling Israel morally reprehensible. The Kuwaiti Muslim Brotherhood speaker also reiterated that the Muslim Brotherhood believe that death for Allah, Shahada, martyrdom, is the loftiest goal a Muslim can achieve. By the way, the Quran says the same thing. Turning to residents of Gaza, he said, "Death for Allah is the highest wish. You received the death you wanted." They weren't just put there to shield Hamas's infiltration tunnels and Hamas's rocket launchers. They were put there specifically because they wanted to die. And now when you call them, as the world is, innocent civilians, as Moon is constantly saying from the United Nations, as Cameron from the UK has stated, as Abomination repeatedly declares and talks about the unfortunate death of innocent civilians, you have to be completely ignorant of this reality. That they aren't innocent civilians when they longed to die. They were nursed from childhood, from infancy, to make this their highest wish, to die for Allah. This speech was originally broadcast on July 14th on Sharmad TV, Kuwaiti TV. Then it was, that's Kuwaiti National TV, by the way. Then it was rebroadcast by Hamas 2 days ago and on Al-Aqsa TV. Hamas defines itself as the militant wing of the Muslim Brotherhood. It says so in the Hamas Charter, Article 2. Tariq al-Sudan, the leader of the Muslim Brotherhood in Kuwait, says, "The equation is those who are killed from our side are in paradise, and those killed on their side are in hell." There was a little more to the Hamas broadcast, where the Hamas spokesperson went a bit further. He said, "We are not afraid of martyrdom. Not long ago," it said, "you cried out loud, 'Death for Allah is our most exalted wish.' It is also the slogan of the Muslim Brotherhood. You received the death you wanted. We have no problem with death. We are not like the children of Israel. And you will surely find them the most greedy of people for life." This is what the Quran itself says. "Whereas we yearn for death, for martyrdom. Every mother, especially mothers in Palestine, of which there is no such place, but every mother in the Islamic nation, not just the imaginary place called Palestine, must nurse her children on hatred of the sons of Zion. We hate them, and they are our enemies. We will plant this in our children's souls so that a new generation will grow up among us, which will erase them from the face of the earth." Al-Aqsa, Hamas TV, August 1st, 2014. We have on line one, Jerry McLaughlin and a friend. I understand the friend's name is Josh, and that he is either Jewish or from Israel. Many of those who have listened to this program over a period of time know that Jerry McLaughlin is the producer of A Long Way Off, the film based upon the prodigal son brought into a more modern setting. And for many years, was and may even continue to be a publicist, among the most successful ever in terms of booking guests with radio and television hosts. Hello, Jerry.
Hey, nice to be with you. Actually, I may very well have the distinction of having booked more guests or more talk shows than anybody who's ever lived on planet Earth, but that I will get passed up very soon if that's the case, because we're moving more and more into doing the movie business just about full time. So my best guest I ever had, though, during the heyday when we were booking like Fast and Furious, was a gentleman by the name of Craig Wynn, who we booked on, oh my goodness, well, between what I booked you on initially and then what you did after they asked you back, you didn't even need me anymore if there was thousands of shows.
Yeah, about 3,000.
Yeah.
About 3,000. And that's, yeah. I mean, that's a lot. That's a lot.
30 shows in
yeah,
a year.
Yeah, and when you know what's so amazing about the 3,000 shows that we did together and independently is that the subject was a topic that America doesn't want to hear. And the subject was the direct correlation between Islam and terrorism. And so, you know, it wasn't exactly like we were talking about planting roses and having them come up without aphids. I mean,
oh, no, let me interject and say that when I was booking you, Craig, this is before we even invaded Iraq. This is when you wrote a book called Tea with Terrorists. And in your book, you predicted, A, we're going to invade Iraq. B, it's going to end up being a total disaster. C, it'll end up in quagmire. D, you literally spelled everything in that book over 10 years ago. And every single thing you ever wrote in that book has happened except Hillary Clinton being president. Now, you didn't technically say it was Hillary. You had a woman that was strangely similar to Hillary. And once you know it, she's dead and coming back to life now politically. Who knows what that part will come through, but everything else did. Anyway,
we're on the cusp of that prediction coming true as well. I mean, we really are on the cusp. She is dominant. She actually won the popular vote against Obama in the first term. She won the Democratic popular vote, but lost because of the Electoral College, if you will. And now she's overwhelmingly the favorite amongst Democratic candidates to run for president. I can't imagine that a Republican will ever win the White House again in America.
Okay, let me put in two plugs. Plug number one is on August 19th, go to your local bookstore, at least Christian bookstores for sure. It's not going to be Walmart probably till later in fall, but at least in Christian bookstores, August 19th, A Long Way Off, the movie. All right, I'm done with that plug. A nice modern day parable.
So the DVD is being released. It's a real shame. It's a real shame that Christians have no clue that the story doesn't pertain to them. But nonetheless, silly as ever, they're going to sell the DVD.
Well, what does it pertain to? The rapid fire short version.
The story of the prodigal son is about the children of Yisrael. Yahudah and Yisrael returning to the covenant with Yahweh. I mean, the covenant was formed with them, but they went astray. They neglected the terms and conditions of the covenant. And if you read the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, it's one of the most repeated presentations. And that throughout the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms is that they are no longer my children, but because of Yahweh's steadfast love for Yisrael, on the day of reconciliations, they will become his children once again. And so the return home is the story of the return of Yisrael, the chosen people, back into the covenant relationship with Yahweh. We'll have to take this up after the commercial break. Welcome back to Shattering This. We've been comparing the heinous nature of Islam to something that perhaps could be considered sane by comparison to it. And listening to the program was Jerry McLaughlin. I understand that in your office today, you also have a friend named Josh.
He's a nice Jewish boy from New Jersey. His name is Josh Bernstein. Say hello to Josh.
Hello, Josh. How are you?
How are you doing?
I'm doing fine.
Good.
I'm rather troubled by the news reports out of Gaza, where the world seems to want to celebrate the heroic deaths of all of these civilians, calling it reprehensible when they chose to die there.
What do you think of that, John?
Exactly. Here's what I think. I think that, you know, when you have what's known as mass mutual destruction, for instance, the United States and Russia back in the 80s, the reason we didn't go to war is because everybody wanted to live. Well, how do you fight an enemy that's goal is to die? That's a tough thing. And you know, look,
There is one way to do it, and unfortunately, Israel's unwilling to do it.
The way that
you fight an enemy that wants to die is to instead of using bullets and bombs,
help them along.
You use words. If Israel, rather than calling these people Palestinians, because they're not, there hasn't been a Palestinian ever. There were Philistines, but the last of the Philistines were wiped out by the Assyrians 2,500 years ago. They're a completely invented people and an invented nation. It's a myth being perpetrated to give credence to their claim that the Israelis who are living in their land are actually occupying the land of these mythical people. But rather than call them Palestinians, as the Israeli government does, it should just simply call them Muslims. And then it should expose what the Quran and Hadith claim, which is that Jews are apes and pigs, and that they have absolutely no right to live, and that the Quran is a more anti-Semitic book than was Hitler's Mein Kampf. If we could get Israel to openly expose and condemn Islam for the death cult it is, for the menace to the world that it has become, then there's a way to confront this mentality.
Josh could explain Jewish guilt. Please give Craig what you told me earlier and why Israel won't do that. Explain the Jewish guilt thing. I'm not sure I completely understood that.
Well, we were talking about why Jews vote liberal, and it's very simple.
Yes.
It's because of Jewish guilt. It's because of something in the Torah known as Tikkun Olam. Tikkun Olam means literal translation to heal the world. And so liberal Jews in America, they believe in very socialistic and, communistic things, social injustice and things like that. And so what happens is because the Jews are known as the chosen people, they then have a situation in which they are typically more educated. A lot of times they're more wealthy. And a lot of times they have more opportunity in society. And so they feel this internal guilt because of that. And so what do? They vote for the little guy. They vote for the less enfranchised. They vote for the folks that maybe need a leg up in society. But what they don't understand is that those are the folks that are the most anti-Semitic. So in return, it becomes a suicide vote. And that's what Jews in America need to understand.
When Jews in America voted overwhelmingly for Obama, who is, I mean, it's been true that U.S. politicians, Bush also, was hugely anti-Israel, and that both sides of the aisle now are anti-Israel and are trying to establish an Islamic state where the Muslims will be able to have whatever weaponry they want, which will usher in world war against Israel. The fact is that Obama is the worst of a bad lot, and Jews voted overwhelmingly for him. What's amazing, too, if you take a poll in Israel today, 70% of Israelis think that Obama is doing a good job as a mediator in this crisis when Obama is overtly pro-Muslim.
I thought Jews were supposed to be smart.
You know what? And I can tell you the reason for that. That's because, and I'm going to make a blanket statement here, because most, not all, but most American Jews are liberals first and Jews second.
Correct. Very few Jews in America are actually actively engaged in Judaism, which is far more of an adherence to the Talmud than the Torah. But very few, relatively few, most Jews in America, a blanket statement again, but are secular. It's also true that even in Yisrael, which is where this particular poll was taken of Israeli Jews, is that most Israelis are not actively engaged in rabbinic Judaism either. There is, the Shahs, the black hats, are paid a stipend to be religious. But they represent now, 15 to 20% of the Israeli population? It's a very small percentage of even Israeli Jews that are overtly religious. Most are agnostics and most are secularists today.
It's very, very sad that the Jewish heritage, the long linear of heritage you know, from the Messianic Jews, the Christians being the Messianic Jews in the Old Testament, to where we are now, is very, very frightening. And, you know, I don't remember, I mean, I remembered, you know, the media, you know, coming out against, you know, Israel and supporting Hamas when some of these things have happened in the past, but I don't remember it being to this degree. You know, we used to have a lot of Jews in Hollywood and Jews in the media and things like that, and I can't imagine that that vacuum has been completely sucked out of, you know, our society. And for me, it's very, very scary when you see these people in Miami and in Chicago and in Philadelphia and all these big cities, and they're literally screaming death to Jews and drawing swastikas and all this other horrific things. It's very, very frightening. And, you know, a part of me thought to myself that they'd come after the Jews first, but it looks as though they're coming after the Christians first. If you look at the Coptic Christians around the world, and the
No, they really aren't. They're coming after the Jews first. The old saying in Islam has always been on Saturday the Shabbat the Jews, and on Sunday the Christians. One follows the other. It's the way that Islam played out with Muhammad. He began Islam by hunting down Jews. He eradicated the three tribes of Jews in Yathrib, today's Medina, killing the men, enslaving the children, raping the women, robbing them of all of their possessions. And when he overhunted Jews, he then turned to the Byzantine Christians. So it is, that has been the heritage of Islam for 400 years. That is not going to change. The one thing that I do think is important here is that Yahweh is extraordinarily repetitive in his prophets, particularly Yirmiyah and Yeshayah, of telling.
Explain what those are.
Yirmiyah is Jeremiah. It means Yah uplifts, and Yeshayah is Isaiah. It means Yahweh saves. In both of those, he is repetitive in saying that the chosen people, the Israelites, abandoned the terms and conditions of the covenant, and they turned against him, and that he's constantly calling them home. But there will be a time, and it's not in our too distant future, where Jews are going to hear his voice. Now, the one place we may differ is that, according to God, it's the religious Jews that are the most lost, that they are the ones that he has the biggest problem with, not so much with the secular Jews. And I think, with my experience in sharing the Torah on a worldwide basis, what I find is that agnostic and secular Jews are amongst the most open to what the Torah actually says, while religious Jews are not.
It's funny you should say that Josh is a non-practicing Jew, but he's a brilliant guy, and I do want him to give a plug for his talk show at some point in Scottsdale before you guys are done.
Sure, go ahead.
Sure. It's the Josh Bernstein Show. I work out of the Dave Pratt Studios at the Double Wide Network, and I'm also on a couple of stations across the country, as well as a whole bunch of different websites. And
what's the nickname of Dave Pratt, so people would know?
The Morning Mayor.
Yeah, the Morning Mayor. I remember that.
The Morning Mayor.
All right. He's a legendary guy in there.
Well, these are important times. I would a couple of questions for you. Apart from Islamic nations, do you know the nation on earth right now that is the most anti-Semitic and then the second most anti-Semitic? It's really interesting as it relates to our times.
You know, I'm going to just try to just take a guess at it, and I would say either China or the United States.
Nope. Not even close. No. The most anti-Semitic nation on earth in terms of having a 90% hatred of Jews is the Ukraine. The Ukraine is where the two worst incidents of the Holocaust took place. The Ukrainian Jewish population has gone from about 6 to 8% of the population to a tiny fraction of 0.1% of the population. The second, that's why Putin, when the riots began in Kiev, referred to the pogroms that incredible Ukrainian rage and hostilities against Jews. The second most anti-Semitic nation on earth is Greece, and it's a direct derivative of the Orthodox Church.
Wow, I didn't know that.
85% of Greeks blame Jews for every negative thing that happens in the world today.
Huh.
Yep, the world is rapidly devolving into blaming Jews for everything, just like the woman that was resigned from the UK cabinet, rather than blaming Muslims for their death cult, wanted to blame Israel and said that Israel was the one that was morally reprehensible. And the protests around the world that have shouted death to Jews shows that a very scary percentage of the world's population agrees.
It is very, very frightening. And that's why we can never allow this country to, you know, be taken over and have Sharia law, God forbid, implemented in our court systems, which we already know that they're trying to do. You've got very large Muslim populations, Murfreesboro, Tennessee. You've got Dearbornistan, Michigan. You've got areas outside of Virginia.
Paul's Church and almost all of Central Florida.
Right.
Well,
they
they can't. They can't assimilate. You can't be a good Muslim without
religious
terrorist
beliefs.
Right. They're,
and
the
you can't negotiate with these people either.
Well, you can't negotiate with any religious person. You know, evidence and reason don't play in the minds of religious people. And
right.
Islam is it just happens to be the most deadly religion, and there is no negotiating with them. As a matter of fact, as it relates to Islam, because of the Treaty of Hudaybiyah, which is profiled at the beginning of the ninth surah of the Quran, any treaty between a Muslim and a non-Muslim is not binding on the Muslim. So you're making yourself easier prey when you negotiate with them. We've come to a break. We'll be back after the commercials. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're having a discussion with a friend of Jerry McLaughlin, Josh Bernstein, who has a radio show out of in Arizona. And one of the things I wanted to share with you, Josh, is that the future is really quite predictable. You were talking about trying to prevent something from happening in America. And having just analyzed Isaiah 17 and 18, pretty much everything that is going to happen relative to Jews in America and Muslims acting badly in the heart of the Islamic world is pretty much laid out before our feet. God says that Damascus is going to fall, that the government of Syria will fall, and it'll fall to terrorists. And then he speaks of what happens when those Muslim terrorists go back to their homes. That's the same thing that happened after the Great Jihad in Afghanistan. They perpetrated horrible acts of Islamic terrorism around the globe. Except this time, this is 1,000 times greater because the impact of the Islamic State is 1,000 times greater than was the influence of Al-Qaeda. And when they go back and they perpetrate these heinous acts of terrorism around the world, Yahweh says that particularly the United States of America, and he uses about 20 adjectives to describe this country, leads a process to thin Israel at the waist, making it vulnerable. And immediately thereafter, Muslims by the millions, if not the hundreds of millions, flood into Israel.
This Jerry butting in here, Craig. Can you give me a quick two examples where the Bible in one of the in the Torah or in the prophets or something actually was referring to the United States?
Yeah, I'm not going to use the term Bible because that's the name of a pagan sun goddess. But and the prophet Yashayah, Isaiah, which means salvation is from Yahweh, in the 18th chapter, Yahweh uses some 20 to 30 different adjectives to describe the nature of America. And he begins by speaking of our neighbor, of our Navy, and then of our buzzing wings, Apache helicopters, if you will, then of our belligerence, of our making demands that for peoples around the world, saying that we're in charge, you have to follow our orders. And then he describes the character of America, and then describes the location of America based upon the rhetoric that follows. And if you do any one of the three references to location, you come to Washington, D.C., the capital of America. And he begins this discussion against America by saying, "Whoa." And Now, he concludes it by saying that the treatment of his children, the Jews, is bad in this nation, that he personally has to rescue them.
Well, what's going to happen in the United States, according to Isaiah, then, after we do these
things to Israel? It's just that God doesn't care what happens to us. He wants to warn, as he does, that any nation that gets involved with... All of the prophets focus on Israel. It talks about other nations, but only as they interact with Israel. The only nation that God cares about is Israel. And so all of the references to any other nation would be a warning that their behavior relative to Israel is inappropriate and counterproductive. So that's really what he says about the United States, and it becomes so hostile that he has to rescue his children from Israel. So that's where we're headed. And in fact, I just finished a fresh reread of all of Ezekiel. And, you know, it talks about that Magog war, which is an all-Islamic war against Israel. That's what's going to happen immediately after America succeeds in forcing Israel to forfeit what's called the West Bank, which makes Israel about 5 miles wide, where 70% of the population lives. It'll be just like Neville Chamberlain sacrificing Czechoslovakia to Adolf Hitler. It'll be the catalyst for the next world war. And I actually think we're fighting that world war right now. That's what's happening with the Islamic State.
Needs to, and I'm pretty sure that they do understand this, that they do not have an ally right now in the United States, not with this government,
correct,
not with this administration,
correct,
and
correct,
that, you know, they need to act alone, and they
correct
probably need to do something. They should have done something, I believe it was back in 2006 or 2007, in May of 2007, I believe it was, when George W. Bush actually told them to not do it at that time and waved it off at the last minute because they were going to launch an attack against Iran at that point, and they've allowed them to exacerbate their nuclear
correct
proliferation program,
yep,
all the way to the point that it is now. And
inevitable.
I'm afraid that, you know,
it's
there's
inevitable
a lot of liberals out there that say, well, we can live with a nuclear Iran. No, we can't.
No, we can't.
And I hope that Israel is smart enough
to take out the nukes in Iran. I don't know if it's even possible anymore. And I certainly don't think it's possible without an integration of American technology. And I don't think America will do the right thing relative to those nukes. I think it may be too late.